Yeah, hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
What is that?
Gina Carano.
Her how tough she is?
Yeah, no, I actually kind of liked her. I wanted to say Gina Carano.
Gina Carano.
Her real name sounds more like a Star Wars name than Mara Jade, or whatever the fuck her name was in this show.
Yeah, you know, or Italian.
Well, I mean, Italian is Star Wars, isn't
That's true.
Is that
the original Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure the Italians invented jizz whaling. Anyway, we watched The Mandalorian episodes 3, 4, and 5. I was very happy in our outside life, in our post-coital communications, that you gave a thumbs up to episode 3, The Sin.
I did. It's not perfect, but it's the one I enjoyed the most thus far.
It's a high point of the early season. I was a little, obviously, spoiler alert. If anybody's listening to the show, you understand that we get spoilers. A little sad to see Herzog.
Absolutely. Like, he's always, I mean... He was my favorite part of the first episode, so it was nice to see that him come back already. Him and the doctor that looks like he should be selling porno to Rick Deckard.
Yeah.
I do not care for that guy's look.
I just realized I said it's sad to see Herzog, and that's not what I meant. I was reading something on my screen. I said the wrong word. This is starting out great.
I'm doing really glad, and I'll cut it in.
Glad.
Perfect.
Yes, that guy that kind of, he looks like pedo Julian Bashir. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, this actually is in the beginning of the episode. So, fucking Werner Herzog, his delighted, satisfied, yes, 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 as he's just saying yes over and over again when he gets the Yoda, Werner Herzog should be in everything.
I agree. I think he would improve a lot of stuff. The Ernest movies, for starters. One thing that I did like is they brought back the ice cream maker.
I didn't notice that. I saw somebody was talking about it on IMDb or something.
Yeah, because there was a thing. It was on the internet. Some guy in Empire when
they're in Cloud City. He's called Ice Cream Maker Guy. He's this dude that just runs in the background holding an ice.
Yeah,
cream
and he's
maker.
Holding a prop and it looks like an ice cream maker.
Yeah,
and they actually brought it back and it's a container for the Beskar steel.
Oh,
that he got. Yeah. And so like it's that's the kind of reference I like where it's like this. It does not matter if you get this joke.
I mean,
I'm assuming it was a reference because it's so much of the show is. It was something I was like, oh, man, the ice cream maker. That's sweet.
That is awesome. I didn't pick up on that. But now that you say it. Yeah, totally. There's I'm just going to say this out of order because it doesn't matter for the episode. But in the next episode. There's a Star Wars Rebels reference of the same kind of magnitude. There's a Lothcat, which plays into Star Wars Rebels. He kind of startles Baby Yoda in one scene. But it doesn't matter. Uh-huh. Like, I'm assuming you've never seen Rebels. Nope. It didn't take you out of the show. You never would notice it.
Yeah.
But for, like, uber nerds, you're like, yes, Lothcat, that's fucking awesome.
Right.
So this show has, although I think sometimes gets a little, like, if they say Womp Rat one more time, I'm burning this show down.
Mm-hmm.
But, for a show that does over reference some of the subtle ones, I really enjoy. And Ice Cream Maker, I didn't even get, and I'm a fucking nerd.
Yeah, when it's done right, it's very fun. But what I also like about the scene is that Werner Herzog makes it seem like bounty hunting might actually be bad. Like that somehow delivering human beings could have negative connotations.
Yeah,
because everyone else is just like, no, it's fine. It's just a thing that you do, but. Like, I don't know who the client is, and this seems like just accepting that is probably a bad idea.
Which I feel like Werner Herzog is part of the, like, the modern BLM resistance, because he recognizes the problem with cops. You know, all cops are bastards. All bounty hunters are bastards.
That's right, yeah.
I don't know how to do it. I guess it's 1-2-2-2 A-B-B.
A-B-B-88.
I love his... This is a phrase people use a lot, and I think it's really good, so I'm going to steal it from whoever I heard it from. But Werner Herzog has a great, that banality of evil,
yes.
That phrase,
yeah.
Where, like, it's just the kind of, he's just doing it, and there's no, like, he's not twirling his mustache. It's just this banal level of evil, and he even kind of recognizes it, but it's like, whatever, man, it's my job. I used to work for the Empire. That's, like, You know, it's like if the boys from Brazil or one of those other, like, the Nazis escaped to Argentina things happened, it would be that same level of just like, yeah, we're continuing our work. I spent 15 fucking years in, yeah. you know, in this army.
I think he rides a line like that's a little bit past that, but not too far into campy. He does seem to enjoy this kind of thing.
I don't know. I think it's just because it's Star Wars. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have a villain that's not, well, I made you the most evil, evil, evil.
Right.
Look, I will regrow my fingers. I'm so evil. And he's just like, yes, I needed the asset. Its materials must be removed. My Werner Herzog sounds like I'm just out of breath. Like, I don't even do anything. Like, there's no fucking, I so want this impression and I can't get it. Yeah.
Oh, I'm German. Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
Yeah. I've run up a flight of steps and I'm having trouble getting my breath back. Not even that much longer in the episode, but I liked the Mando is overhearing Herzog talk to Pete Obashir.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, just extract the force juice and destroy it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah, he says the material, but I'm assuming, spoiler alert, I don't know this after watching the whole season. I'm assuming they're trying to get, like, you know, trying to suck its force out or clone Yoda or something.
Yeah, he ate my cockies and I eat them back.
It is a blue Hyundai Sonata. I enjoy it much. What do you think's going on with Yoda? Why do they want it? Because
I'm assuming it's because I don't know that it would specifically be the four. I mean, because I think we've determined that it's supposed to be like post Jedi, pre the new stuff.
Yeah.
My guess is that it's. I mean, it could have something to do with the cloning. It could be that he has some sort of. If they try to tie it back to how dumb the stuff was in the Rise of Skywalker or whatever, where maybe he's got one of the, like, something related to the stupid homing beacon dagger nonsense. I don't know.
Yeah, I was here's what I want to happen. At the end of season two, they go, yeah, more like Mandochlorians, and then he takes the blood samples back.
And there's tiny. This is all happening inside of Anakin Skywalker's blood.
From the Journal of the Whales, as dictated by Werner Herzog. My name is Mando Skykiller. These are some deep Star Wars cuts. So if you're like a 30-something-year-old doughy white nerd, you're gonna love what I'm saying right now. I like that. This is what I was saying episode one with you, that you might start liking Baby Yoda as the season goes on. That although it's played for cute, it's not like his story is clear. Like, he actually serves a purpose.
Yeah, I still like him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I should walk that back. Is you would hate him less, I think, is actually the phrase I used.
I hated him less in this episode. I don't think he was as cynically deployed in this episode.
Yeah, well, because his usage is here with the, you know, we're going to suck his force juice, where he's not given he's not just there to be. Well, he's the adorable child that must be saved. Like, there actually is a reason that these people are going after him, other than just endangering the cute.
Yeah. Just their interactions, like the bit where he's flying away and Yoda's, when he's riding there in the baby Yoda wants to play with the little metal ball on his thing, on the gear shift or whatever. And he takes it off and gives it to him. And later, when he realizes that it's not there, it feels a bit like this, that I thought did more for their relationship than Yoda cutely turning things on and off again and making a funny face. It just made it seem, it made the cuteness also seem grounded in something rather than just like a bit.
Well, him turning the shit off, I did like, and this is one of those things where I'm kind of tainted by having watched the rest of the season. There's a couple Yoda things that happen later on that, like, I like, because Baby Yoda's kind of fucking with him.
Mm.
Like, it's not like he's being cute. He's actually is trying to be annoying. And this is kind of proven later, which, you know, unfortunately, this is one of the shows that I like a lot better, like having had watched it and looking back. Uh-huh. But I like Baby Yoda fucking with him a bit. But all right, we're missing so much stuff. He goes to the underground land after getting the Beskar for dropping off Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
He gets in a fight with Jon Favreau. And I enjoy this a lot. Not the fight, like, whatever. It's just, but I like that blacksmith leader lady is just watching them beat the shit out of each other.
Yes.
It's just like, yeah, that's just, that's what they do. Like, it just kind of reminds me of like a Sparta kind of thing where it's just, yeah, they're warriors. They're going to punch the shit out of each other. What am I going to do? Break this up? Like, yeah, this is the way.
Well, I really liked with the Mom DeLorean, or whatever.
Mom DeLorean is delightful. Good for you. Million comedy points.
How she's like, you know, we got all this steel. We can make you new armor and stuff. What happened to your old armor? And he's like, oh, I got my ass kicked by a mud horn. She's like, we'll make you a mud horn signet. And he's like, no, that's fine. I don't want to remember that.
Yeah.
Because she's like, you crapped your pants at the first sign of danger. I'll make you that signet. I'm good. Thanks.
I like how they built the kind of mythology around the Mandalorian here, around their kind of society or cult or whatever it is, that he's like, no, it wasn't a clean kill or whatever. Like, it wasn't like, you know, whatever he said. And she's like, oh, cool. No, I'll make you like, what were they called? Whistle birds?
Yeah. Which, I mean, if this stuff's so valuable, why are you using it to make stuff you're throwing away? But whatever.
I'm thinking like it's only like a tiny little bit to make those. Because I think it was like,
they are tiny.
Yeah, like I can either make you a decorative shoulder piece or some, but
I can make you this commemorative plate of the time you fell out of a tree, or I can make you some weapons.
Yeah, I think it, just the pacing of them kind of doling out what the kind of this version of Mandalorians are is well done. Because if this were a George Lucas Star Wars, we would have every laborious detail of their society by now. We'd already be back on Mandalore, home planet.
I am left with some questions regarding with what happens at the end of the episode versus what's happening now, because they're all mad at it because it seems like he's giving them too much exposure. And then at the end, they're like, yeah, screw it. And I'm not real sure what happened there other than convenience.
I think the idea is that I think that's why they had the fight with him in the beginning with Jon Favreau versus him is that I think that's Jon Favreau's voice, but I think the idea is that, you know, this is the way is that they got each other's back, even if they're like fighting. Like the idea is that, you know, it's your platoon or whatever military, I don't know fucking military words, but it's your army man group.
It's your army man group. That's what they're called.
Yeah. Well, I mean, cause they always say, you know, you bond with your army man group, almost like it's your, you know, those people that you hang out with, your
they do that. Yeah,
family. Yeah,
that's like a big part of the Oliver Stone movie, Army Man Group.
Yes, yes. I love that. I love that part of Army Man Group. Well, not no, the other Army Man Group where the guy like has a hotel heart attack and he's like, man, I got to find that fat guy that used to run that other Army Man Group. And he's like a guy that's good at writing, man. Yeah, I love that movie. Yeah,
it's Fat Guy Goes Nutsoid.
Yeah, Fat Guy Goes Nutso. Yeah, by Troma Films.
I also, I could have done without them rehashing the I'm having a flashback while you build weapons.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think, you know, there's an interesting parallel to be made between the trauma of your youth becoming the weapons of your adulthood. But you did it already. And so it's also just like, hey, you know, I'm happy to build you armor. But if you're just going to sit here crying while I'm smelting, can you just go somewhere else? It seems like he just does this every time.
I don't hate it, but I don't like it. And I think this comes down to, and this is not the answer, but I think if one director had done all the episodes, that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, it still has to go through. I mean, there is still someone at the top that, you know, that looks at all this and goes, yep, that's fine. But I just feel like no new information was imparted.
Yeah.
And for a show that I'm on, you know, now episode 3, and it seems like it's just out of 8 and it's just starting to get going. It's like, okay, why are we repeating this?
Yeah, that comes down to that. I think those first two episodes should have been one episode because this third one feels like the first episode of The Mandalorian and the other ones were set up. Yeah,
it feels like this should be a, like an ABC miniseries to date myself horribly. But you know what I mean? Like, how they did the miniseries of It, and it was like two Sundays in a row of like a two hour movies. Do that, because there's not a lot of information that needs to be parsed out like this, and it's not, you're not, I've been so unthrilled with all the characters and mood and stuff like that that it's, for those first two episodes, it's hard to want to keep going. And I think that's one of the reasons I like this one, is that it seemed like stuff was actually, it's not that stuff was actually happening, but like there felt like there was weight to stuff happening. There was a much more of like a mood and atmosphere of the whole thing.
Yeah, this is the best directed episode that we've seen so far. Like, it looks nice. There's actually, like, shot choices. Like, it mm-hmm. this actually, like, yeah, this feels like it was directed, not just shot, you know, well, not just doing, like the, workman, like, you know.
When he's going through, when he's going to rescue Baby Yoda later, it felt like an actual action scene and not, like, a bit from a comic or something like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's not, he's not stopping and monologuing. It felt more like something out of... I don't know. I hesitate to say like Breaking Bad or something like that, but you know what I mean? Like there was a grittiness and a like,
yeah,
this is happening in the moment kind of feeling to it.
There's in the final three episodes, there's a couple that feel more like that as well, where,
nice,
you know, going back, it's interesting because I like this. I still like the Mandalorian a lot, but like I'm seeing I don't want to say like, I mean, they're flaws, but like I'm the easily fixable flaws. Like the first two episodes are really, I like them having looking back on them, but like you're totally right. Like it just shouldn't, it should have been the show earlier. I know that's mm-hmm. that's a weird way to put it, but it's, you know, that thing where a lot of shows, the first season's really super awkward. And when rewatching the show, you can skip it. Like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that first season is unwatchable, but that show gets really good. That's probably a terrible example. That's just probably not watchable anymore.
I don't think Joss Whedon can do a first season of anything very well. But I do think, I mean, like, I think that even you can get smaller than that. And like, there's so many pilot episodes that are but then they get pretty good right away. But it felt like that. It felt like a pilot that they like rekajiggered later.
Yeah, which is kind of, it's awkward, which is fine. Because I mean, I love this episode. One of the best things in here is, I think we have to agree that Carl Weathers is like the highlight of the show.
I do like him a lot. And frankly, I wish he was the only one that called him Mando.
Correct.
Because that seems sort of fitting for their relationship and just his sort of nature. But I'm a little tired of everyone calling him that. But
there's one person you're going to very much enjoy having him called Mando later as the season goes on that I think you're really going to like. But you're right. Too many people call him that. But Carl Weathers, when he comes back, he's like, Mando, you're my favorite human ever. Like, he just wants to kiss him in his dumb helmet. And then
just that same thing where it's like, oh, no, I gave the tracking devices to everybody. Like, don't worry about it. But you did it, so you're my favorite.
It's so good. He's like, but you're the one that came back with it. It's so fucking, I love it.
And I wish there was a little bit more of this than... Because I feel like later when they have the confrontation, when Mandalorian is trying to escape with the baby, that there's like this just restating of their relationship and more sort of like expositional stuff. Whereas this just sort of tells you so much more about their relationship without just explaining it to you. Which, I mean, I think I don't know who the show's targeted for. It feels like it's targeted for kids a bit. So whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, I hate to say things like that, but I'm gonna. A lot of modern stuff is written for unsophisticated watchers, is the way I'm gonna word it better. Yeah. I was gonna say for dummies. And this isn't written for dummies, but it's written for people that aren't savvy to kind of, you know, movie language.
Right.
And I think they're not committing to making something that they can make and believing the audience is going to follow
it. It feels, as someone who's worked on a lot of corporate videos, it's that kind of thing where it's like, well, I don't know if people will get this. Can you do it in the dumbest, most obvious way possible?
I think I think the stink of Disney on this. And the thing is, I think this is as good. Frankly, season two, I think is going to be better. But I think this is as good as you're going to get from a Disney-based anything, is that they're pushing the boundaries of what you can do under Disney, because I think Disney is afraid that people aren't going to get it.
And right, yeah, it's not like they're looking at focus groups and testing and whatnot.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I think this is almost makes the show better, the fact of how much they got away with under that umbrella, because, I mean, that, you know, the fucking, the last Star Wars movie, it was just... Yeah, let's not talk about that again. But what, you know, the fact that this came out so well went under the same umbrella as that piece of shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly better than The Rise of Skywalker. But
I mean, it's not even a comparison. I mean, this is good. Like, even if you don't like this, this is demonstrably good. Rise of Skywalker is dog shit.
I think this episode is good. I don't agree with the rest of. So far, I'm not thrilled with the show.
But being thrilled and thinking, but I mean, it is objectively good. It's not like, even if you're bored by it, at least it's put together. It tells a story. Like Rise of Skywalker fails on every level of storytelling.
I guess you're saying good when you mean competent.
Yeah, competent. Yeah, fine. Yeah. Yes, you're right. You're right. Better word. I agree with that. Yes. This is competent. It is a fully realized thing.
Yeah.
Which is in short supply recently.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah. Do we need to talk about the tracking fobs?
Well, only I do like that he basically gave them to everybody. And I couldn't tell if they're, because it kind of matters more later, but I couldn't tell if they were in relation to the pod that Yoda was in or Yoda himself.
Yeah, that's what, no, because it traced Ming-Na Wen as well in that later episode.
So it seemed like maybe it's with Yoda himself, because when he finds the discarded pod later, and I wasn't sure if it was just tracking that, but I did want him to ride around in it, and I'm bummed that he didn't.
That would be fun.
Like, he's just jamming there. His legs are sticking straight up.
Yeah.
And he's, like, prowling down the street.
Or it's, like, a really awkward skateboard. He's got, like, one foot in it, like, when Marty McFly tries to, like, push the hoverboard.
Yeah.
That is a good question. But I more meant on a, can we wave our hands? And I think the fact you didn't bring it up, I think, answers my question. Is that we can just wave our hands and go, yeah, that's how they work.
I mean, for me, there was a little bit of like, so the only other person that found him was the robot. Everyone else at that bar just went, I'll get to it eventually.
Oh, I don't even care about that. I meant how it works. Like, how the hell are they tracking Yoda?
Oh, I just kind of went Star Wars tech.
It's, okay, no, we're fine with that. Okay, no, yeah, storytelling wise, incompetent people in the Star Wars universe, I have no problem with that.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So that's why I'm fine with just the robot and him having made it there. I'm just like, yes, incompetent idiots are the only people in the Star Wars universe. But Ugnaught said that a whole bunch of people got fucking laced murdered before.
Right. But yeah,
IG was going to be killed if Mando hadn't shown up. He would have exploded, so.
Right. But just they're like, this thing you use this thing to track the guy. There he is. How did you find him? I used this thing. Fine. That's good enough for me.
I'm glad, because I'm on the fence about that, but like I feel like with you saying it's okay, I can kind of make it okay, because it's like kind of stupid, but it's like Star Wars is kind of stupid, so like I'm kind of okay with it, you know.
Well, the only thing that really bothers me about it is when in the next episode, like he knows these, because all these bounty hunters have found him once with this. In the next episode, he's like, "Well, we'll be safe here. They won't find us. Oh my God, they somehow found us." Yeah, they all have tracking beacons that you used to go track Yoda before. Like, why is this a surprise?
See, that's the thing, is I wonder how far those beacons go. Is like, okay, so if you, let's say I'm on Maz Kanata planet. I don't know. I can think of a single planet that wasn't Tatooine.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only apparently like three planets in the Star Wars universe. So.
Well, I think that the idea is that they're in the Outer Rim, so there are few planets and that. But okay. But by the way, who gives a shit about that? I'm a Maz Kanata planet. You're on Tatooine and you've got my tracking fob. Can you track me there, or do you need to get to my planet first? Like, does the fob become active when I'm in the right system? Is it like an infinite level of tracking?
Didn't he use the tracker to find Baby Yoda in the first place, or did they have like his last known coordinates?
Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't clear.
Yeah.
I thought he was surprised, because like, I thought the idea was, oh, we're on an unknown planet. Like, we found this backwater planet. No one's going to think to come here and look at their tracking fobs.
Yeah. I mean, I guess.
I don't know. It's not clear, which that's why I can kind of be like, yeah, whatever. It's,
yeah.
It's just, it is.
For the kind of pulpy thing it wants to be, fine.
Yeah. Because also, you know, Mando, kind of dumb. So I'm kind of all right with him. Like, be like, I'm on this planet. No one's ever going to be, find me here.
Agreed.
Yeah. But I like it. I get it. That reminds me of Star Wars, of, you know, Han Solo, that's just big swaggering dummy. Like, yeah. I mean, Star Wars is big and dumb, and none of the characters make a lot of sense, and it's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know. When Mando's walking down the street and like all the tracking fobs start becoming live after he saves Baby Yoda, that's a really good kind of visual storytelling scene.
Well, exactly, and that's a thing I think I like about this episode as well, is it took a lot of quiet moments, which there, you know, frankly should be a lot with this character, they have been, but actually made them do something. Like they provided a feeling or a mood, or told a story with it, rather than just being like, hey, look at these desktop screensavers. Doesn't this look cool? Which is fine. I mean, a certain amount of that is fine, but it was just nice to see that space actually filled with something that moved the story along.
Yeah.
Or that provided some cool scenes.
There, when they start attacking, there's like a Darth Maul there, which I liked.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know his species name, but I liked seeing a Darth Maul. It was sure. fun.
The bit at the end when we're saying it's Jon Favreau. I'm assuming it is. But when he like flies by in the jetpack and gives him a salute was a little like, okay.
Yeah.
Like this episode you had me and then, okay, we're doing that now.
Rarely do I regret making a note, but I'm going to read you the note I regret. They do a good job of making the jetpacks look not too stupid. Because jetpacks mm-hmm. are intrinsically stupid. Mm-hmm. And I wrote that during the fight scene. And then that end part where the fucking Rocketeer,
yes.
like, Eddie goes, I need to get me one of those. Which I kind of like, because I like Mando kind of opening up a little bit now that he's, you know, he's opening his heart to Yoda. He's kind of being like, not being quippy, but he's actually engaging in some kind of something.
Uh-huh.
And I like they're doing that slowly. But boy, that old salute was like, ugh, boy,
it was a little corny. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yes, when they all show up in the fight and they have they're just sort of being lowered from the ceiling on jetpacks. It's
but they spend just like the exact number of frames to not make it look really stupid.
Because
mm-hmm. if it was like 3 frames longer, oh boy, those like that is because like the physics of them make no fucking sense. Like they're dumb, but like they shot it quick enough that it's fine. And I like that one dude just railing people with like the kind of machine gun rifle thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That the dude in Rogue One. In Rogue One had the kind of like backpack.
Yeah. 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 Donnie Yen's friend. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't do Rogue One on the show, did we?
Nope.
Okay. They're all the same movie. It all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm gonna say it now. By the way, audience, right? Big announcement. I forget what the third moratorium is on that we said we're not gonna watch any more of these. I think. I really enjoy Mandalorian, but there's a couple scenes that reminded me of basically how much I hated Last Skywalker. Mm-hmm. I am declaring after the season of Mandalorian a Star Wars moratorium on John and Alex hate stuff.
I'm very much for that.
That until Mandalorian season 2, which I'm not saying we're doing, but that is the only thing in the Star Wars continuum that we can theoretically watch because I don't give a shit about any other sequels. I don't give a shit about the movies that are out already. There, we have a full Star Wars moratorium unless the Wachowski siblings direct a Star Wars movie and then we have to watch it.
Yeah, I would definitely watch that or someone completely ridiculous.
Tarantino. Oh, no, he wanted to do Star Trek.
He wanted to do Star Trek. Yeah. Unless they make a the Joker. But it's in Star Wars.
OK, wait, we're at this now. What if Werner Herzog directs a Star Wars movie?
Oh. They would never let that happen. No, but that would be great. If it was like Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, Tatooine, I would absolutely watch.
Okay, yeah. So moratorium in place.
Yeah.
How do you feel about, and this is another one, a lot of Mandalorian is me on the fence about things where, that's why I was curious about the things you're going to hate in this show. How do you feel about him getting shot in the Beskar when Carl Weathers gets shot in the Beskar?
Hey, fine. I was fine with it. It didn't bother me.
I'm not bothered by it, but when it happened, I'm like, my thought is, oh, John's going to hate that. And I'm like, well, maybe John's not going to hate that, but it's something that springs to mind that you're going to hate.
And I think it was handled well enough. And again, like with sort of the nature of his character and kind of how big he is a little bit, that like also, the kind of pulpiness of it was like, yeah, okay.
And I was thinking, also, because Mandalorian is a seasoned veteran at things, because we're going to meet a new kid on the Black Bounty Hunter idiot in the third episode.
Mm-hmm.
But because Mando is a seasoned veteran, I can make the argument that he was aiming for the Beskar because he likes Carl Weathers.
Yeah,
he saw him put it in the pocket.
Yep.
There's enough there to go, okay, no, it's fine. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, because it seemed like, I mean, I don't think he's like, well, this life of bounty hunting is over for me now. I'm sure he still wants to be like, hey, when this all blows over, are we cool?
Yeah.
I still need work.
Well, I mean, that's what, I mean, okay, end of that. Anything else to say about episode 3?
Nope.
So episode 4, it starts off with that. Is him and Baby Yoda saying, well, let's just hang low here for a year
mm-hmm.
till ship blows over, and then I can get back to murdering people.
Yes.
So, not the strongest episode of the series.
No.
I think visually the AT-ST looked fucking awesome. And it really got across how terrifying that would be if you were in anywhere near that thing when it turns on. That is a terrifying piece of equipment.
Having the red light from the inside kind of make it look like it has red eyes, and the fact that it was like dilapidated and beaten up and rising from the forest like some kind of horrible monster. I thought added a lot to it, because the AT-STs, they just got their asses kicked by the Ewoks, and particularly since this whole episode is basically like preparing for the raid on the Ewok village a bit, to be able to kind of introduce those things but have a new menace to them, I thought was kind of effective. But my love for the episode ends there.
I have a few more positives on it, because I didn't hate it. I just thought it was a nothing. It was a skippable episode. I like that Gina Carano's character, because they introduced her as she was a drop trooper and she cleaned up after Endor.
Mm-hmm.
After the battle that ended the last war, you know, so which establishes the timeline of this, which I do like in the show, that they don't tell you exactly when this is, because they make no reference to the main, you know, the Skywalker line, which, again, it's a positive because that'd be really easy to do. I like that they reference that she cleaned up on Endor and then they train them to essentially be Ewoks. Like, we're watching human Ewoks.
Yeah.
Like, it's subtle, but I think that's a neat little internal reference, but it's not over the top. If you've never seen Return of the Jedi, it doesn't matter. You don't have to worry about that, but there's a nice little thing.
I mean, like the whole, I mean, it's essentially Seven Samurai. The whole like plot crux of it, of like, we have to defend these villagers against these bandits.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been done in, you know, Magnificent Seven, all this kind of stuff in video games.
Home Alone. Yeah.
Yeah. Home Alone 2. But it's
Lost in New York, starring our president.
I'm saluting right now. You know, I don't expect the same kind of emotional or thematic depth that these movies have in a half hour episode. But man, something would have been nice.
Yeah, it's not,
because this was just like idyllic. This idyllic farmer. The Uruk-hai show up, cause some shit. They train them to fight the things, and then no one loses anything except the bad guys, and then they go on their way.
Real bad indie comic look on the aliens. They look like somebody did an indie comic space thing, because like it's like an alien, it's a human, but sort of a dog face.
Yeah,
you know? it looks like a third tier character in Saga. We're like, yeah, we don't really feel like thinking about them. That's a dog guy in the background.
I will say one other thing I did like in this episode is the continuing streak of the flamethrower being only somewhat useful.
Because
he deploys that thing a lot, and it's like 1 for 4.
And again, feels like Star Wars. I like cocky, swaggery badasses that actually kind of suck.
Mm-hmm.
Fun. It's because the bones of the story, as you said, there's a lot of movies that have done this already, and classic movies. This is an easy ground double. Like, this should be fine, and it's just boring. Like, there's nothing. I liked him and Gina Carano fighting. There's a nice little sequence. He follows Gina Carano's footsteps with shitty Star Wars vision, which I enjoy. I like when the tech looks shitty in 70s. It feels like Star Wars. And then her being an ex-MMA fighter, it feels brutal when they're fighting. And there's a stunt that happens. And this happens in other movies. I'm not saying it invented this, but I don't know how much I've talked about it on the show, but I used to be a skateboarder when I was young. I was pretty good at it. And being pretty good at a skateboarder means that you fall a fuckload. So I know how to take a fall athletically. Like, I know the position. So when I watch stunts, I'm like, oh, I see how they did that. I don't get how they did her throwing his face into the ground stunt.
Right.
That is just, there's no athletic way to take that. His arms are down. He is taking the brunt of like a 4-foot fall to a prop helmet. And his chest and face, like, that is a brutal bit of business. And I was like, holy fuck, it's a nice fight. You can tell that she's like, she's trained in the arts of MMA.
That there's actual human beings involved. And I did enjoy that.
Does Bryce Dallas Howard, is she a director? I know her as an
Bryce
actress.
Dallas. Yeah. I was going to say Bryce Dallas Howard is the, from, we watched Jurassic World. That's right. She got this job because of her fine directing ability, and in no way due to any sort of Hollywood nepotism.
But I get that you're being sarcastic, but I mean, literally, does she direct?
She has. Bryce Dallas Howard has actually directed a few things, a bunch of short films, a music video for M83, and a couple of documentaries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's probably why that flight got lost over Malaysia.
That's exactly it.
I don't know if that joke made sense, but I found it funny.
I got it entirely. Okay. It doesn't mean it does. But
no, it's as long as two broken brain people could share the same weird line of logic. All right. So, yeah, she's not a director because that really carries in this.
Yeah, it just, or at least she's not good at directing this kind of stuff.
Because the pacing in this is awkward. The time spent in the wrong spot.
I mean, it's not like that. The writing is doing her any favors either, because it is just pretty boilerplate, empty-headed stuff.
But
it could have been made fun.
But you could have done boilerplate is fine, but that means you have to make it flourishy or do interesting camera angles, like throw a filter on the fucking, I'm saying dumb things, but you know, like do director shit to make it interesting. And this was just shot like a sitcom. I mean, the fight sequences were well choreographed. They looked nice. The AT-ST thing looked nice, but like any human drama interaction was just kind of one camera here, one camera here, switch between the two. Just there was really nothing to make it interesting.
And it doesn't help when, as I've said before, when you have a character that's just an action figure and I think in the third one, that scene I brought up earlier where he kind of realizes that he doesn't have Baby Yoda and he might actually be feeling bad about what he's done. I think if it's actually that actor in the suit, I do think he carried that physicality well. Like, you read everything, all those emotions in that. But in this, there's a lot of just staring at the person.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, again, I don't mean to be dunking on Bryce Dallas Howard here, but I think that's directing too, because there's a couple spots where, like, so that actress lady they cast to be his temptation to just become, you know, a guy that stays here. Like, Gina Carano's like, you've got this beautiful widow. And, like, that actress does a fine job. They just, in no way did they sell it from his perspective. So like, there's no point that he feels tempted to take his helmet off. Like except for at the end where she touches his helmet and there's like this moment that's undersold by the fact she filmed him taking his helmet off to eat fucking bread earlier with an eye line of children.
Yeah. Which, like in front of an open window. And it's like, well, okay.
But that's a direction problem. That's not script. Why would you have it in an open window? You can see the eyeballs of other humans. That's shitty directing. That's bad setup.
I also, again, this was an episode where I feel like Baby Yoda was very cynically deployed in his cuteness. He's like, what's his butt from Jerry Maguire? Jonathan Lipnicki. Like just waving his cuteness around like a cudgel.
I agree for the most part, but in the rewatch, I thought the soup part actually was kind of all right because that was in the middle of a brutal fight. And they look up and they're seeing Baby Yoda just kind of stare at them.
The soup part didn't bother me that much. It was more just like the stuff at the beginning where he's like, I want to come along too and cutely walk along. And then at the end when they're leaving and the little girl is crying and she's like, I'm going to miss you so much.
Those were...
They were products that bore your likeness that I could have.
It's like that scene, it's Spaceballs. So you can buy Spaceballs a t-shirt. Yeah. Yeah, the soup part I didn't mind, and I liked Baby Yoda like basically eating a frog because it's kind of gross.
Yeah, well, I mean they did that before, but I liked the callback.
I that's fine, but yeah, the any kind of that little girl hugging him thing.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed about Baby Yoda in this episode that it was a smart character design is one of the things that was really weird about the prequels was you saw Yoda walking and saw his feet and legs a bit. And that's just the way that puppet is designed, the size of its head. When you see the full body, the proportions kind of make it gross. Like seeing Yoda's body made it gross. And putting Yoda in like a Baby Yoda in like, you know, like a potato sack really does a lot of mileage to keep the reality of it being a thing less than a puppet. Because imagine seeing its feet. That would take away from
I do every night. I imagine seeing Baby Yoda.
We can't do this again, John. We've had this conversation. It's in the Jaws contract.
All right. Well, so is body shaming puppets, but we're doing that.
Oh, no, I'm not body shaming. No, I'm saying it's a good choice because, boy, that would look really goddamn awkward. It's a smart design that could have, that because they're selling the toy, I mean, that's what it's there for. it you readily could have had its cute little fingers and cute little toesies, but like, no, it sells it as a character that could have readily, because we have to, like, that the rest of the show kind of hinges on us having empathy towards this thing. Mm-hmm. And if its reality is questioned at any point, that takes away a shitload of the kind of verisimilitude of the show. Yeah, I used a smart word. Fuck you. Mm-hmm. Like in the first episode, that part where they scan Yoda with the red laser, mm-hmm. I've never seen like puppet / CGI look that good. That looks like a thing being laser scanned, which is a tough, I mean, that's a tough bit of CGI business because the reflections.
I did have kind of the reaction you're talking about in the next episode. There's a bit where Aemon Sedaris is interacting with the puppet and he just kind of has this expressionless look on his face of just, duh, because he's a puppet.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, right. Yeah. You just are doing this to a baby doll.
One of the things I didn't like about her performance, and we're going to get to that next episode, but is she did a bad job with the Yoda puppet. She did not give it weight. She moved it as if it didn't have weight, that it was the weight of a puppet instead of an actual living thing. And that takes a shitload away from the authenticity of it. Like even I've seen people do mime work, you know, improv mime work that gave more weight to an object than she gave that thing.
Yeah.
And it really took away from it being an actual thing. It looked like a shitty prop, even though that shitty prop looked the exact same prop looked amazing two episodes earlier.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I don't know if we want to get all the way into this right now, but like her, and I love Aemon Sedaris. I think Sedaris is wonderful.
I think she's very funny.
But there's something about her whole performance that feels like she was alone on a green screen and then they put everything in later.
Yeah. Well, that's weird.
I mean, some of that is just sort of the nature of this show in general, is that she's acting against a, you know, an action figure and a puppet, and that can be kind of, you know, I'm sure that's kind of hard, but there's something about it that like just made the whole thing seem somewhat uncanny.
Yeah, let's slog through the rest of this stupid Sanctuary episode. Mm-hmm. So they save the shrimp juice from the dog people. Uh-huh. They beat up the SDSD, ATSD. Sexy widow mom was like, hey, you should stay. And then the fob thing. Oh, one of the only other positive point, and I think you're going to agree with me here. It's like, it's kind of disturbing to see a baby in gun sights, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was like, it occurred to me like, oh, you don't see that often. And that actually, like, although obviously Baby Yoda's not going to get his brains blown out in the fucking fourth episode of the show, or third, whatever the hell we're on, fourth. That actually kind of made me nervous. It's weird because you're not accustomed to seeing that, which kind of ballsy for a Disney show to show a baby getting fucking sighted by a rifle.
Yeah, it's not something you see or you shouldn't be seeing every day. What I also like is in this episode is Mandalorians. He loves steaming dudes. Both he did it to Carl Weathers. He's
I don't think I know what
guys.
Steaming dudes means.
He's just shooting steam at dudes.
Like I don't know what shooting. I'm sorry. I'm not being obtuse for a reason. I don't know what that means.
When Carl Weathers has him on the ship in the previous episode, he shoots something that causes steam to shoot out of Carl Weathers. Then when he's talking to these two guys in this episode, he's like, get out of here. Press a button, steam shoots out of him. Like you love Schwitzen guys.
Okay, yeah, I forgot about that. I thought you were using that as like a euphemism, like staring someone down or something.
No, he just loves steam and
I forgot about that. To be fair, there was precedent in the original trilogy. Because remember when Luke shot Darth Vader while he's in fully helmeted with like cold steam?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, in that awkward fight.
It fogged up his lenses.
Oh, yeah, that's why. That's what, no!
I don't have my wipes.
Yeah, and then they left. Oh, the other thing I wanted to ask you. You know The Hidden Fortress? You ever see that movie?
Oh, yes.
That's like basically Star Wars ripped off?
Yeah.
Okay, there's two characters that are like the main two characters. Is that what they were doing with the two like kind of villager people that approach Mando?
Yeah.
It just kind of reminded me of that. The kind of same kind of bumbling, weird energy.
Yeah, I mean, they, again, like those are, you know, at this point sort of archetypes.
Yeah.
But I do kind of want to, now I'm like thinking about the costuming and I'm wondering. That, I mean, because there's two guys that are essentially C-3PO and R2-D2.
Wait, who are they?
Are you talking about the guys in
C? No, C three. I don't know what are those.
One's a gold lamé Barbie doll that talks different languages to air conditioners, and the other one is a trash can that beeps.
Oh, you mean Legolas from the Rankin Bass Lord of the Rings? His voice,
yes.
And the guy from Time Bandits. Oh, I completely know who you're talking about.
Sorry, I forgot. That's how you reference things.
By the way, John, I just off the top of my head named two other things that Kenny Baker and fucking Daniels were in. Yeah. I'm really proud of myself.
I'm more impressed by the Anthony Daniels thing, being honest.
I'm frankly in shock right now.
Look, you just accessed parts of your brain. Like there's that therapy, the rapid eye movement therapy, and it's just unlocking Anthony Daniels movies you've seen.
Yeah. Though to just put myself down, I actually just spaced on his first name and almost called him Christopher Daniels, who is a professional wrestler.
Man, yeah. How embarrassing that would have been.
Well, I mean, on many levels, yes. All right. So episode 5, The Gunslinger.
Mm-hmm.
I liked a lot of this episode, but this is the first episode I disliked things in. Not just like I was, because the Ed Worst of the show has been like, it is what it is. You know, maybe it's a little boring, but
I will say one more thing about the previous episode.
Oh, please. Yeah.
I think Star Trek would have at least killed a villager. I think there would have been at least like one death, but there was nothing.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Disney. I don't know. That's all. Yeah. Disney.
Yeah. No.
That's the truth. So it opens with a dogfight in space, which I like this as an opening just because it feels Star Wars-y. Like, I don't care who this guy chasing is. It's a fun thing. Except for it's an incompetent dogfight. Mando looks like an asshole and then goes when he does the that's my line.
Yes. That's like, oh, that's some good Marvel stuff.
That hurt because beyond it being a little hacky, line is a movie term. That's my line. Like lines are films. That's a script term. Scripts aren't in Star Wars. Like they don't watch movies.
This is a hot chocolate moment for you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, thank you. Yes. It's a hot chocolate moment where I don't think I mentioned it when we did Rise of Skywalker, but at some point they reference there being cameras. They go, oh, you got to take out that camera. Camera is too earthbound. Call it a vid scope or something.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
But when they said line is just that's a script that's Earth, and it sounds small, but Star Wars, the fun of Star Wars is those small moments, and that one, and there's other stuff in this episode that I actually directly dislike, but that starts it off on the bad foot because it's like
There was also to the like I sort of said with the whole like Marvel quippy thing, it's like, I thought this guy was supposed to be a quiet badass. Like who's he saying that to? Like,
well, no, I'm fine with him quipping. Cause the idea is like, because he has no facial expression is he's falling for Yoda. Like they're in love. They're go fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're right. I'm the creep.
Yes. Well, I mean, to be fair, they're not mutually exclusive. I don't know where that came from. Just because you're a fucking creep doesn't mean that I'm a good guy. I mean,
has to be
know thyself and know. Yeah, that's why you're game recognize game.
Okay, fair enough.
Right, Epstein's in the house. So,
ooh, baby Epstein.
But him, kind of opening up to Yoda.
You just cracked it. You had mentioned in the last episode that we did that there's a possibility that Yoda might be a clone. And the truth is that Yoda was involved in this, basically, like he was the Epstein and he was in with the Emperor and all this stuff. And so they're all just trying to cover their own ass because they thought they got him by setting up the swamp planet. And
I got it.
Like, so think of that next time everyone was like, oh, I love baby Yoda. Think about what you're really supporting.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that little ship he flew to Kashyyyk is actually the Lolita Express.
Right. Exactly.
Got it. Well, this is horrible. what was I saying? Oh, yeah. I actually like him quipping. I just hate that quip. So here's why I like him quipping now is for character growth to happen with someone without facial expressions. All we have are visuals for the most part and quips and script. So him starting to kind of, because he's coming out of his shell a little bit, that he's now kind of in love, you know, he's got this fatherly affection for this baby. He's also befriended Gina Carano. There's a bit of him kind of becoming more of like a fully realized person. And the way to get that across in the character, it would be for him to talk more often to get, not necessarily quippy, but talk more often. And yeah, since he's only talking to a baby, it's got to be quips. It's just, that's a fucking terrible quip.
It's also, I don't think he's talking to the baby. I think he's talking to us.
No, I know. But
like, I agree with what you're saying. Yeah. I just think that that's not a great execution of that.
I'm fine with him talking to us. because he's 20 years or whatever of him, like, not really saying fuck all. Of, like, you know, it's like, well, finally, I broke the dam. So he's just going to be talking to him. So it's like if you ever tried quitting smoking, where it's like, I'll just have one, and the next day you have a pack, sure. And you have, like, seven. It's like he's like, fuck it, I'm going to be talking all over the place. He's probably singing dumb songs in the shower, you know.
Baby Yoda tired of him.
He's in the evacuator. He's like, I got Baby Yoda, yeah. So I don't mind that he's quipping. I hate that quip, like, a ton. And also, how many fucking shots can his stupid ship take? He sucks at dodging, and then it takes one shot to blow up the guy. It's shitty choreography. It's just a really bad opening, because I think a lot of the Tatooine part of this episode was actually really good. There's a couple of weird spots, but real bad opening, actively bad, mm-hmm. and it sets you on a bad foot.
Well, it's that happens. We get this little dogfight, and then, rather than have him be like, oh no, my ship, I gotta land, there's a thing where he, you know, gets up, checks a cup, flips a couple of switches, and then walks over here and looks at that, and like, well, I guess I better land.
Yeah,
it was like this huge stretch. I'm like, wait, why did that just happen? It just seemed, again, like, I don't think it was creating a mood or anything. Like, I don't mind when things are more langly paced, but in this case, it was just like, what just happened there?
Yeah, it's really awkward. So he lands. They say this is a Mos Eisley tower, which is kind of fun. Hey, we're on Tatooine. This is you know, where Star Wars started. And he lands, and the three Doughboy droids from Episode One are hanging out with the cat from BoJack Horseman. And I don't know if they're the same three Doughboy droids from Episode One, but fuck you, don't make me think of Episode One. Two, Amy Sedaris kind of sucks at this, and then she says "Womp Rat." Fuck your face.
I do like the, because she's always a weirdo in anything that she's in, and so I don't know if I don't know if they let her have free range, but the Ellen Ripley wig is terrible, and then the fact that she doesn't have eyebrows is magical. That just made me extremely happy.
Totally fine with that. Yeah, I bet you won't hear me say anything about her lack of eyebrows, because other than delightful.
And there's something about Amy Sedaris saying the phrase "carbon scoring" that activated something in me. Like, I don't know if it's serotonin uptake, or I can do Krav Maga now, but that was apparently something I needed in my life.
It's probably Krav Maga. You're really good.
Probably test that out.
Then it starts getting some of the stuff I like in this episode. He walks by stormtrooper helmets on pikes.
That was cool.
Yes, that was cool.
Like, I have tremendous issue with this happening on Tatooine at all. Because I know your thing about it, you know. My thing about, oh good, another desert planet, but it's just like, you are on Tatooine. Like, this should be the home of Star Wars or whatever, and it's not. You know, like it doesn't matter. It's like, we've already been introduced to 13 other desert planets in the history of the Star Wars movies. Go to one of those. Go to a nice tundra, go to anywhere else. Why are you on Tatooine?
I don't mind it, only because Tatooine was set up as a shitball place that lawless people would go to. I mean, that's why Boba Fett was there. Jabba had his whole fucking gangster shit there.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like that had anything to do with what was going on in the plot. You know, I mean, other than the target is there, but that could be anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, it's you're in it and it. In a galaxy. There should be more than two planets.
It's totally fair, but it, for Star Wars, and this is me going too deep in Star Wars, is that Outer Rim is kind of like, Star Wars isn't, it's simultaneously really big and really small, that it takes forever to get anywhere good, but also you can get anywhere instantaneously because it's not very well written. But once you're in the Outer Rim, you kind of hang out in the Outer Rim. So I'm fine with, but also I agree with what you're saying. Like, it just happens to not bother me. Like, you're more right than wrong, but it's fine. And they didn't slam you over the head with.
Yeah. I will definitely give it that. They weren't like, hey, look at that. It's Jabba's palace. Remember that?
Yeah.
You know, and it was just now we're on Tatooine.
There were some really nice Tatooine references, but if you aren't a huge nerd, you wouldn't pick up on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fine with that. I know you were into Star Wars, but do you remember Beggar's Canyon? Is that a thing? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you know what that is, but that's not a huge
Or the Jutland Wastes. Yeah.
Yeah. If someone saw fucking Star Wars in the 70s or once when they were a kid, they're not going to go, oh, Baker's Canyon. I remember that. That's when they were shooting Womp Rats.
Right.
All right. So Heads on Pikes are great. We like that. And then they cut back to Amy Sedaris and the droids playing cards, or they're playing Sabacc.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I like them playing Sabacc, but it's like, we just saw the coolest thing that's ever happened in Star Wars with the stormtrooper heads on pikes. Don't cut back to a fucking jokey, I'm playing with my droids. I'm going to bet you 3 blue G-sticks. Oh no, I'm going to add a motivator on top. I'm all in. That's wizard, Annie. Fuck you.
Yeah. But then I do like that they underline, because as soon as like Yoda started wandering off of the ship, it's like, God, Mando was such a bad dad. But that actually is a plot point.
Yeah, part of the thing I like about Baby Yoda in this show is that, again, the expectation is that instant love between the two characters and he's going to be a doting father. No, he just fucking just leaves him on the ship.
Yeah, or even that he's had this revelation that he cares about this thing. He still can't bring himself to give a shit.
I think that's really well done. And it really kind of makes it, because again, it's so hard because you're not seeing the character's face. I think those things really, like, I feel like I kind of know Mando a little bit, even though we don't know his name or anything, but like, it's, I don't know. So he goes to the Mos Eisley Cantina. One, there's no Figure and Dan, no modal nodes. And who's working the bar?
A filthy droid.
A filthy droid. Droids, their kind aren't allowed in there. In that, Mando is kind of lovingly echoing some of Han Solo's character. I love that this fucking kid, this newly minted bounty hunter, is doing a fucking Han Solo cosplay. And it reminded me of, available on patreon.com/AlexBolin from Six String Samurai. Remember that mariachi kid?
Yes.
That had like all the cute honeys around him and he thought he was so fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
And Six String Samurai just schools him with no, like, he's just a flip of the finger. And there's just, he had no chance.
Yeah.
And I like that character archetype. And I think... It's hacky. It's a reference, but I mean, that's what Star Wars is. Let's steal shit from Japanese movies.
Right.
And same as Six String Samurai. And I like this, where this kid is doing so much to the point that he's sitting in Han Solo's old booth. You can see the McClunky carbon scoring over his right shoulder. Mm-hmm. You can actually see this car, but it's perfect. And it's kind of dumb, but kind of dumb, over the top, really stupid, stealing from Japanese movies. Mwah. Star Wars, I feel hugged.
I would probably be more in line with your way of thinking if his characterization didn't begin and end with that. Like, well,
that's kind of why I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, he's Jackie Jr. from The Sopranos. Like, he's just this asshole that's in over his head. But like, they give, like, he's like, oh, I want to be in the guild. Why? It doesn't matter. You know, oh, I'm gonna kill you to be legendary. Why is this so important to you to be legendary? Doesn't matter. That's good enough on its own. And he's like, there was nothing to that character, and I just found him kind of irritating. If he was like more like affable, maybe it wouldn't bother me so much. But I just did not like that guy. And that's the guy that I thought like, is this stunt casting? Is he somebody? And he's just some dope.
I liked that. In that they're just doing the archetype show. This is, I mean, that's what they called the episode Gunslinger. I mean, at no point were they like hinting that this is depth.
Even if I'm not getting depth, which I'm, you know, I'm not expecting too much from Star Wars, but it's just not fun. Like, so much of this episode is just bleh. Like, oh, we're going to go spend a couple of minutes like racing across the desert in a fashion that's not at all interesting. It looks like I'm sitting on a toy outside of one of those quarter operated machines outside of the grocery store waiting
for
my mom.
Stop talking about the way you masturbate. This has been covered.
No, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just when they get on the speeder bikes, which, make them swoop bikes, you cowards. But when they get on the speeder bikes, like them going across the desert, I was just like, man, we're spending a lot of time with this and this sucks.
Yeah.
It's just them cruising.
It's not strong, but I thought it looked nice. I like Ming-Na Wen a lot. I like her. More importantly, they gave humanity to Tusken Raiders.
That I did like. Yes, I'll give you that.
That's nearly impossible, and they pulled it off, which I think actually gives like this episode like 15 more points in my mind. Him doing the hand signals and like them being like somewhat reasonable people. Because remember the original one, they're like, oh, those are sand people.
Yeah.
It's probably some kind of horrible pejorative. But, you know, he's like, treats them as humans. Yeah.
It's a sentient being, sure. Yeah, I did like that. But and again, like I like Ming-Na Wen a lot, and I felt like I kind of wanted to see more with her character than what we got. But what we got, she was great.
Yeah. So. And that arrogant kid, although, yeah, it's not much character depth. I did like the him kind of drawing on Mando while he's sleeping because he's like, ah, you look at this guy. Mm-hmm. He's asleep. And then Mando's just kind of sitting there like, you done yet? I like that kind of moment. That's the level of embarrassment I can deal with. I can't watch anything with Larry David because it's too embarrassing. Reminds me of my life. That's the level of embarrassment I can deal with. Like just kind of play acting, getting like when you're singing in your kitchen and you get caught. Like I can deal with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. Like a more sort of cartoonishy fun thing.
Mando. Here's a quick thing about him. Maybe learned how to dodge at some point. Mm-hmm. Like he's just standing there and just gets shot in the chest. Strafe. Like make some effort.
Yeah. It's like when you're playing one of those like shooter video games where you can heal if you just rest for a little bit.
Yeah.
And you're just like, ah, screw it. I'll take a couple of hits and then I'll just hide behind this pole.
I mean,
I think like that's how he approaches. I mean, like so much of the show feels like a video game anyway. So
it is written like a video game a little bit. I didn't mind like him getting shot. It's not like it's a big deal. Like, cause I mean, he is wearing like incredibly expensive, essentially laser proof armor. Mm-hmm. So like it's, but like just, it hurts. Like maybe just try, but put some effort into it. Like maybe, maybe it's heavy. He just doesn't feel like putting the work in.
Yeah. He should be going, owie.
Yeah.
I got a boo-boo. I'm the Mandalorian.
Yes. That is what should happen, John.
Yeah. That's why I'd be way more believable is what I'm saying.
The kid shoots Ming-Na Wen, which I actually thought was, I liked, I mean, I didn't like that it happened because I like her a lot, but I wasn't expecting that. I thought that,
that was honestly a twist I was not expecting.
Yeah.
So.
And, so the kid goes back, kidnaps Yoda, and, Mando does the, John McClane, gun behind the back thing, but with the flashbang. Yeah,
I mean, didn't they kind of do that exact same thing to Ming-Na Wen and the kid just falls for it because he's a dum-dum? This isn't a criticism. This is just I feel like that they did the exact same thing, which is, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's similar strategy. Yeah. Yeah. And that kid is a dummy. So he fell for it.
Yeah.
And
it's insult to injury. It's like, yeah, you watched me do this and I'm doing it again to you.
And then the nice part about, the kind of ending here is the kid gets like Mando just straight up murders him. Mm-hmm. Which again, not that I wasn't expecting it, but I mean, you got to know this character for 20 minutes, even though he's a douchebag, and he gets just straight up fucking offed, like right on camera.
Yeah,
and,
well, and, some
and
of
then
his
he gets droids to drag it to Beggar's Canyon. Beggar's Canyon, that's where you shoot womp rats.
But yeah, but I mean, some of his decisions to kill or not kill, you're kind of surprised by. I mean, like in some of the fights or something like that, you're like, well, I'm surprised he's not just laying waste to everybody. And so you start to wonder like, oh, maybe is he, softening up or something? Nope. He'll just kill a dude.
Yeah. I wonder if this is like a kind of ham-fisted way because Baby Yoda was nearby. He's just going to straight up kill somebody.
Yeah. I mean, I think he just
probably
do it
positing.
Anyway.
I'm just positing. Yeah.
Yeah. He may have killed Amy Sedaris. We don't know.
Now, have you watched episode 6?
No. I stopped here.
So at the end of the episode, at the end of this episode, a shadowy figure kneels next to Ming-Na Wen. All right. Well, before we get there, is there anything else you want to talk about this episode?
No, I'm good. It was ugly and kind of boring.
Yeah. I didn't think it was ugly. Kind of boring. Agreed. Amy Sedaris wasn't that great in it. Really needs to work on her puppet work. Shadowy figure kneeling next to Ming-Na Wen. John, prediction. Who is the shadowy figure?
Gus Fring.
No. It is the guys that did the theme song to Kids in the Hall.
Oh, shadowy men on it. But the planet's not shadowy.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you're right. It's probably not them then. Okay. Yeah. So.
I'm only guessing that the Giancarlo Esposito, because I know he's in this show.
Now, who do you think Giancarlo Esposito would be playing in this show?
I don't know. Some guy.
Some guy. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you think that the person kneeling next to them is some guy? I sound far more sarcastic than I am. I'm just trying to like narrow it down. You don't think it's a character or a race or a Star Wars reference. You think it's a character that's going to be introduced and it's, another Werner Herzog or something, just like a character that's from this continuity we just haven't met yet.
Yes.
Okay. That is a fine guess. I'm not going to tell you either way. Mm-hmm. I just want to establish where our guess parameters are.
Yeah, I have no real idea. I'm not heavily invested in it. I'm sure whoever it is, I'll go, Huh.
I'm not going to spoil it for you, but I don't even think you're going to care as much to say, huh?
All right. Well, fair enough.
Next episode, I will explain why that comment happened, but...
All right.
It's totally fine, it's a thing. Okay. It's Boba Fett, John. It's Boba Fett.
Oh.
I mean, it's not, but everybody kept thinking that was Boba Fett, and I'm going to tell you right now, if that was Boba Fett, I wouldn't have said we watched this show.
Yeah.
Because that's real dumb. Now,
that would,
he can show up in season two if he wants. That's fine. But you can't have, you can't be like, oh, we're doing a show about Mandalorians. Let's bring back that guy from the dead. People come back from the dead. That's fine. Star Wars. I'm fine. Whatever. Hand wave it. It can't be in season one. It just can't happen. It needs to be season two or three. You can't have it.
Which makes me think, was Jango Fett a Mandalorian?
I think in the accepted canon right now is that he just had Mandalorian armor. He's not technically a Mandalorian.
Okay. Because I was just thinking about like how he took off his helmet a lot.
So there, I'm just going to give you a backstory because this never is explained in the show. So I think I'm happy to explain it. In Star Wars Clone Wars, and I think some of Rebels, there's a whole bunch of Mandalorians. And they take their helmets off all the goddamn time.
Mm.
So the reference, but they also didn't do this whole this is the way. And I don't think they ever showed like the burning of Mandalore or whatever they said. Like that.
So they're not orthodox.
I think that's what they're referencing here is that this is like some weird ass, like shell shocked culty weird thing that came after like their planet got torched and they're doing like some weird basement Scientology stuff. I think that's what they're referencing. Cause like, yeah, the helmet thing. Yeah. And also to be fair though, when Jango Fett got his head chopped off, his head didn't fall out of the helmet. Which is the way.
That is true. That is true. I did discount that.
Yeah. You did discount that, John. And I frequently when talking to you think, you know, he totally discount that just, head falling out thing. He discounts the slipperiness of the head. Next week, we're going to finish up The Mandalorian Season 1 with episodes 6, 7, and 8. What? Give me a prediction. What do you think happens the end of this season?
Bill Burr will show up at one point.
All right. Good. Really, really good guess.
He's going to use the flamethrower at least one more time. And Baby Yoda will be in peril at some point.
All right. Baby Yoda in peril. Big Bill Burr and flamethrower.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to guess the ghost of Qui-Gon Jinn comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And, finally drinks that tea that sexy robot C-3PO from episode one offered him.
Yeah. All right. I think that's fair. That'd be nice to see Qui-Gon Jinn come back and apologize for starting all this.
Here's the reason I think my prediction probably won't like be exactly right. It's because I've already watched the episode.
Yeah. So I was going to say that. Like, it seems like a weighted thing.
So it's like, it's actually like a doubly shitty guess. Cause one, it's a shitty guess. And then two, I've already seen the episodes in which the thing I just guessed doesn't happen.
I prefer the reading that you've watched it, but you've already forgotten what happened.
You're not that far off because I have not rewatched the episodes. And there's one episode I 100% remember, the one with Bill Burr in it. I remember. I don't really remember. I mean, I remember the plot points of the final ones. And there's one robot that might be my favorite robot in all of Star Wars coming up.
Oh. And I'm excited for that.
Now that you've heard me say that, the second this asshole shows up on the screen, you're going to be like, you're one, going to hate me for saying it, two, going to completely understand why I said that.
I look forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah, we're good. Follow us on Twitter at JawsPod, Facebook, John Alex 8 Stuff.
Yeah.
Anything else we want to tell them?
We have that number if you want to leave a message.
That number that I've known this entire time is 503-575-9118. 503-575-9118. Leave messages. Tell us about stuff. Maybe tell us what you want us to watch next.
Yeah.
If you have recommendations. Yeah, do that. So call, leave things. Tell John that he looks nice in that outfit.
Thank you.
You know, do that. All right.
Yeah, and we'll be back next time with wrapping up Mandalorian.
Indeed. Bye.
Bye-bye.